Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Good morning, everybody. Sunday morning in the Delaware Valley. I'm Glenn Macnow, along with my pal Ray Dinger. Beautiful day downtown, Ray. I assume your walk through Rittenhouse was just delightful today.
It was very nice. Yep, everybody was out. A lot of folks walking around with their morning coffee, walking their dogs. It was very nice. It was very pleasant.
So nice to see the world open and up again.
Yeah, it is.
It really. I mean, you know, look. I don't need to be the person to tell everybody we're not. We're not totally through this yet, and please be careful and get your vaccine and so on. But I feel good about things, Ray, and I think it's going to be a good summer.
I do too. I think. Let's put it this way: I think we're all ready for it.
Oh yeah, we're way overdue for it. I don't know right now how the summer's going to be for the Phillies, and this is what happened late yesterday afternoon. Oh, okay. Well, we're going to tell you in just a second. In a game that went on forever, Ray, a game that started, I think, at 4 and finished, shortly after midnight. Hold on. Moshe, tell me when you got that fired up. All right, here we go.
The 1-1 pitch on the way. Bounce towards third. It's a fair ball. Gloved by Alec Baum. The throw is low, and it's off the glove of Hoskins. Another run is home. As Carlson will score, and that'll be an error on Alec Baum. And it's now 6-1 St. Louis.
And it didn't get better.
No.
It got worse. By the way, I have to tell you, the only thing that makes a bad Phillies game tolerable is the brilliance of Fransky and L.A. I like Franson as well. But just, they can do a bad game and keep me listening to it.
Yeah, I mean, they're Harry and Rich were the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they were just a real pleasant listen, you know, and, you know, they didn't try and tell you things were good when things were bad. You know, if it was a bad game, you could tell in their voice. I mean, you could tell as soon as you turned the radio on, you didn't even have to know the score. You could just tell the tone of voice with Harry and Rich. You knew, are the Phillies winning or are the Phillies losing? I mean, it was that obvious. And these guys are much the same way.
Yeah, and so much of it is between the lines. It's not even what they say. As you say, it's the tone of voice, and it's, you know, little kind of clever little things they drop into the conversation. But anyway, Ray, I do fear that my preseason optimism may have just been based on the fact that I want them to do well, because they do have more holes than I anticipated. And to begin with, you go with the fourth and fifth starters who have been terrible, particularly Matt Moore, particularly yesterday. Ray, Matt Moore, in his three starts with the Phillies, has an ERA of 10.64, having given up 13 earned runs in 11 innings, 17 hits, 9 walks, 4 home runs. But the problem is, of course, if you're going to replace him, there's nobody to do it, unless, Ray, you're ready for Chapter 5, 6 of Vince Velasquez.
Mm-hmm. Which is coming, by the way.
No, it's not.
Oh, yes, it is.
No, please.
Oh, yes, it is.
I cannot. He came in yesterday. He's the most, you know, Someday we'll do this theme. Not today. I got another theme I'm going to trot out in a couple of minutes. But someday we'll do just the most unwatchable Philadelphia athlete. And I think he takes the cake.
Yeah, he's certainly in the discussion.
He's bad, but he's also slow.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Spencer Howard, who they brought up, and they're kind of, you know, working him in as a reliever. I don't know who else they got. I didn't think I would ever miss Jake Arrieta, but... Issue number one is those two starters at the bottom of the rotation, which the Philly grabbed in the offs in January, I believe it was, and spent $7 million to bring those two guys in for the year. Our friend Jason Stark wrote something interesting, posted something interesting on Twitter last night. He said, young Matt Moore was something special, but expecting the 2021 Matt Moore to log dependable innings was always a major gamble by the Phillies. Highest ERA since 2017 with as many innings as Matt Moore. Matt Harvey is the only one. Matt Harvey, ERA of 6.05, Matt Moore, 5.96.
Wow.
Yeah. Second worst ERA in baseball.
Well, I always trust Jason's stats, and if he says it, I believe it. But, yeah, I mean, that was one of the reasons why, you know, over the last couple of weeks when you and I were having – very different views of where this Philly season was headed. Matt Moore was part of my concern. I mean, you know, he went over to Japan last year. I mean, his last few years in the big leagues were not good. Nobody wanted him. You know, he went over to Japan and had a good year pitching in Japan, but I've seen that before. You know, mm-hmm. I just didn't trust him. I thought he was going to come back and be the same guy. And to this point, he's been. Now, you know, Joe Girardi's taken the stance you would expect him that, oh, it's early. You know, I'm not – it's too soon to judge, or to quote him. But I think this is what he is. I just don't think he's up to the task. I mean, you're not asking him to be the number one. You're asking him to be the number four, but I don't even think he cuts it as a number four. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think you know, in very short order, you're going to be looking to replace him, but with who and with what? I don't know.
Yeah, there's nobody walking the streets who you're going to be able to call in and do it. And this is not a time of year when teams make trades. So you're in some trouble there. The other issue I want to talk about with the Phillies starting the show, and by the way, you're certainly invited to call us. Actually, we're going to have a giveaway I'll tell you about in a moment, 215-592-9494. The center field has been a disaster since the start of the season. They call up 22-year-old Mickey Moniak. You and I were kind of struggling with his age yesterday. He's only 22. He's only 22.
Right.
Okay. I'm not ready to write this guy off, as some people are. And the manager said, we told him... he's going to play. That's the bottom line. It's not like I'm going to play you one day and sit the next. That's not what I'm going to do. So the starting lineup comes out yesterday, Ray, and who's your center fielder? Roman Quinn.
Yes, exactly.
Who goes 0-for-3 again. And from what I mostly listened to the game on the radio. I didn't hear. Thank you. At any point when he made any kind of hard contact. Saw in the paper today, the Phillies have now gone 11 straight games without getting a hit from their starting center fielder.
That's hard to fathom.
Yeah.
That's hard to fathom. Roman Quinn, I think, has one base hit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 0-43. Whatever, 1-for-22, I think that is. Yeah. 0-43. So, I mean, I would just put Mickey Moniak in the lineup and play him for the next 10 days.
Sure.
And lefties, righties, see what he can do.
Exactly.
What do you have to lose?
I'm with you. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, Haseley's gone. They considered Kingery, but they've decided, no, he's not ready to come back. Herrera, they've decided he's not ready to come back. So your options really are down to Quinn and Moniak. And, you know, I mean, I think we've seen enough of Roman Quinn to know kind of what you're going to get there. So... look, Moniak was first pick in the draft for a reason. I mean, there was one time you thought that he could play. So here's the opportunity. Put him out there and let's see what he can do. I mean, I don't say that with great hope or expectation. I mean, I don't think he's going to go out there and be any kind of a revelation. I think he's going to kind of be what he is. I mean, he still looks to me physically overmatched in the big league level. He really does. He's going to have to prove that to me otherwise. But
yeah.
At this point, you know, I would just as soon put him out there and let's find out if he can play. This is his opportunity. Let's give it to him and let's see what he can do.
Correct. Because there's no other. I don't disagree with anything you say. He has looked overmatched when he's come up, and I don't know that he's ever going to be any good, but this is certainly an opportunity to give him that chance to see what he can do. So, okay, we are together on that. Sixers off today. They host Golden State tomorrow. That's the Sixers are the thing that's kind of keeping my sanity. You and I will talk Eagles draft in a moment. And now, Ray, I want to talk to the Flyers, talk about the Flyers, and this is what happened yesterday.
One reason Nico Bjelke-Biel was taken out of the lineup, though, was penalties. Here it's one that you'll take. Ovechkin sliding into the slot area, and Bjelke-Biel gets a hook on him. Ovechkin scores!
Gotta be quiet, Jonesy. Ovechkin's shooting. You know he's gonna threaten to score. Another power play goal for Ovechkin. He makes it 3-2 Washington. And it's now 730, and he's within one of Marcel Dion, the all-time list.
Yeah, and it all went downhill after that. And I don't mean to poke fun at Jonesy, who's A, our friend, and B, great at what he does. But the poor guy, right as he says, well, that was a good penalty to take against Ovechkin, and then Ovechkin scores. 4 seconds into a power play, Ray. Flyers get crushed again by Washington. I don't know if they're embarrassed by that. They've allowed 22 goals in their last four meetings against Washington. They are 8 points out of the final playoff spot. They're just deader than dead. Deader than dead. There was more tension between the head coach and Carter Hart yesterday. So, Ray, why am I... We've had bad teams in this town many times over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm often disappointed, and I'm occasionally a little bit angry about it. I don't know if you can tell me why I am angrier at this Flyers team and franchise than I have been since I can remember any franchise in this town. I'm madder about them than I was about the Eagles season, which was dreadful. I'm madder about them than I am about the Phillies not making the playoffs since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
I just am thoroughly disgusted with this team.
Well, I don't think you're alone.
I do. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say, I don't think you're alone. I mean, from what I have heard, I mean, they have limited seating in that building now, right? I mean, they're not selling.
Yeah,
not selling at the building. Yeah. They're just selling out a handful of seats, and they can't even sell those.
Yeah.
I mean, even with, a 5,000 person cap there, they can't. Not that many people want to see this team. I mean, that's how bad it is. They can't even. In this reduced seating capacity building, they can't even move those tickets. And I understand that this team is and has been now for a while unwatchable. They just are. They just are. And part of it is they're not only just bad, which they are, but they're soft bad. They're soft bad.
Yeah.
I had somebody who really follows this team say to me, I'm just absolutely disgusted with them. And a huge fan, huge, huge fan, followed them for years, and is just utterly disgusted with them, and said that when the Flyers take the ice at the beginning of the game, when they come out the tunnel and take the ice, instead of playing music, what they should play is the jingle from the Mr. Softy truck. I thought that was pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I thought that was pretty good. Yeah.
I'm about to take a really unpopular stand here and know that I'm going to get a lot of blowback on it, but I don't care. And the question, Ray, is why I hate Gritty. Because I'm pretty alone on this. And I didn't love it when they first introduced it. I thought it was a bit of a Fanatic ripoff. By the way, Ray, today's the Fanatic's birthday.
Oh, okay, good.
So happy birthday to Fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
And Gritty got panned initially, including by a lot of Flyers fans. But then the outside world started attacking. We did what family does. We defended ours. And so the more outsiders criticized it, the more people here embraced Gritty. And I get that. But what Gritty represents to me is the silly diversion that says, don't focus on our lousy hockey team. Look and laugh at this shiny object. We don't have a cup-contending franchise worth bragging about, so let's plaster our goofy mascot everywhere. We don't have an organization that relates to fans as it used to or relates to legends of the organization. And trust me, I know a lot of those guys. So let's divert everybody's attention by making this mangy patch of orange fur the centerpiece of our marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And last week they announced tonight's Hockey Fights Cancer Night, which is a great thing the Flyers do, that the league does. I applaud it. But rather than announce it by paying tribute to a guy on their team who heroically beat cancer, they put the big promo on social media with some stupid picture of Gritty wearing a purple anti-cancer jersey and a visor and waving his arms. And I know the event is going to involve Lindblom in a special way. It's really going to be nice. But their first instinct is always, let's go Gritty.
Yep.
They're a bad team, and I know that plays into my thinking about this. And we've talked about how the Flyers, you and I have talked about, they're no longer a marquee franchise in the NHL. They're no longer a relevant team at the top of the league as they were for close to four decades.
Right.
They may not have won a cup since the 70s, but they were always important. They were always top of the standings. They were nationally broadcast. They were in the discussion. They were the top of merchandise sales. And what people bought, the merchandise was, you'd buy a jersey, a number 16 or a number 88 or a number 97 or a number 28. And what they're selling you now is a corporate subdivision, is a tentacle of a conglomerate that is out of touch with its fan base and its former players and its former stature of excellence. And so we'll just push out the clown to make you giggle. And Ray, I promise I'm going to wrap this up, Ray. I know I'm getting out of control here.
No, that's okay. I mean, you're doing fine. I'm enjoying
okay.
it.
I know personally that saying this positions me as the boomer. And I've had this debate with a friend of mine who's a woman in her 30s. And she said to me the other night, she said, as a casual fan, she and other casual fans love the spectacle and the chaos that Gritty presents. And I don't. I hate it. I know the response I'll get. I've seen enough Abe Simpson waving his fist at the clouds to know how some people will interpret what I'm saying. My frustration is that the Flyers stink, and I want people to share my anger over that rather than say, hey, look at the funny fat orange guy, because that's what the Flyers are trying to get you to do, and I think they're getting away with it.
Well,
that's all I got.
That's plenty. That's plenty. Actually, you could have gone on, and I would have been fine with it. I would have. if there was anything you said that I disagreed with, I would have stopped you. If at any point I would have thought that you were okay, you're taking this too far now, I would have stepped in, but I didn't. I thought, you spoke for me. I think you spoke. No, I think you spoke for more people than you realize.
I don't think
it's an age thing. You know, maybe to some degrees it is. But I think people in this town that really like hockey, that have been following the Flyers and supporting the Flyers for years, are equally disgusted with what they see now. They're disgusted with the team. And I think they look at Gritty and see him the same way you do. And frankly, I do. I mean, everything you said about him, I didn't like him when I first saw him. I thought it was stupid. I thought it was ugly. I didn't think it was necessary. But okay, and then you're right. I mean, there became national. He became a subject of national scorn, and we as Philadelphians felt like we had to sort of circle the wagons around him, and we did. But the problem is, and I'm not going to repeat everything you said, but I mean, the bottom line is exactly right: is that the organization now just realizes that the team that they have is awful. It's non-competitive. It's soft. They don't play hard. They don't play for each other. I mean, they're the antithesis of everything that Philadelphia sports fans want to support and rally around. So, okay, we can't sell that, so let's sell the mascot. You know, and everywhere you go, every time you walk through that building or you look in the window, what you see are shirts with Gritty and hats with Gritty, and Gritty is this and Gritty is that. That's what they're trying to sell. And as long as they feel like they can hide behind Gritty, then the one loss record doesn't matter. And the fact that they're no longer relevant in the Stanley Cup, or even Stanley Cup, heck, just postseason discussion, is sort of, oh, that's okay, because the kids all like Gritty, and we all got Gritty hoodies. And that's really what the Flyers have become right now. And it's a sad thing for those of us that have supported this team for a long time. And as you said, for years and years and years, even though it's been a long time, long, long time, generations, actually, since this team won a Stanley Cup, in those intervening years, The Flyers were always a team that had color, that had personality, and had an identity. They were. And it was reflected by the fact whenever they went traveling around the league, the Flyers sold out. The Flyers, yep. The Flyers were a draw. The Flyers are coming to town. We want to go see them, you know. And now they're just another team. They're just another team is what they've become. And I don't know if, as an organization, if they're willing to come to grips with that. But before they're going to turn this thing around, they better. Because I think they're at the point now where, I mean, they're kind of already lost the national hockey audience. But now they're well on their way to losing the Philadelphia audience. And no team in this town can afford to do that.
Well, I hope you're right. Let me work in some calls here. Let's get Bob in Marlton. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Bob.
Hi. I listened to your interview yesterday with the first black hockey player.
Willie O'Ree.
Yes. And it was a great interview. But I don't know if there's a local connection. Willie O'Ree was the first black man to actually play in an NHL game. But the first black man to actually sign was a local guy. He lived in Atlantic City named Art Dorrington. Now, Art was born in Nova Scotia. He signed with the Rangers in the 1950s. He played in the International Hockey League.
I think his name came up in the interview. Ray, didn't you bring him up?
Not in the actual interview, but when I was signing off yesterday, when I was bringing the show to a conclusion, after the Willie O'Ree interview ran, before we signed off, I talked about Art Dorrington and said that there are some people here, if they're old enough and they're hockey fans that go back far enough, they may remember Art Dorrington, who played for the Atlantic City Seagulls and the Philadelphia Ramblers. I saw him play. I talked about it, but it wasn't during the Willie O'Ree conversation.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm old enough. If you worked in Atlantic City in the 60s or the 70s, you knew Art. Everybody mm-hmm. knew him. As a matter of fact, he's in the Nova Scotia Sports Hall of Fame. But you would have never known he played hockey, because to look at this man, you know, he was, you know, a small, diminutive man, but he was known as a scorer. Yeah. And the reason he didn't play in the NHL is because he broke his leg in 1958. Otherwise, the Rangers were going to call him up.
Did not know that. But there you go.
Yeah, there was actually a photograph that I saw when I was doing my Willie O'Ree research before we interviewed him, of Willie O'Ree and Art Dorrington together. That a few years ago, Willie went to Atlantic City, which is where Art retired and where he lived the rest of his life. And they were cutting the ribbon on an ice skating rink down there that they named after Art Dorrington. And they were doing some youth hockey and things down there. And Willie O'Ree came in for the ribbon cutting. So, you know, those two guys were at the same time. And, in fact, Dorrington did indeed sign a pro contract. He was the first African-American hockey player to sign a professional contract. He did that before Willie O'Ree. But unlike Willie, he never did make it to the NHL. He played in the Eastern League and, as I said, played 1 year with the Philadelphia Ramblers. And I got to see him at the arena at 46 and Marcus Street.
Nice. Okay, we got a full board of callers. We will get you all coming right up. And I got a question, fun question for Ray when we get back. 215-592-9494, Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP. Danger Glenn Mack now, 94 WIP. We'll get to the phones in just 1 second. I wanted to throw this out. We got a nice full board of callers, so we're going to get to them. By the way, later in the show today, Big Daddy Graham joins us, as he always does on Sunday. We're going to get Ray's draft report, and we're going to do a chapter in the Didinger Files. Young Ray Didinger making his way on the beat. But Ray, mm-hmm. I want to come to you with this and then to our listeners and ask them to throw this into their conversation. A very interesting question rumbled around Twitter all week. That got me thinking, so I'm kind of going to steal that and use it, and it is this. You can pick one athlete ever to have an injury-free career, beginning to end. Who are you choosing? And I tell you what, you and I, I'll ask most too, can do national and or local, you can do both. So who you got? And don't steal mine.
Well, I don't know who yours is.
I know. That's why I know you're going to steal mine.
Maybe not. To me, it's the first one that comes to my mind is Bo Jackson.
Yes! That was my national. No question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he was... they use the term freakish athlete a lot, but he was the definition of it. I mean, in terms of the combination of raw power, and world-class speed. I've never seen anything like it in one package. And the thing that sets him apart from everybody else is that he did it across two sports, that he did it in football and he did it in baseball. He was an all-star in both and showed the ability to be a dominant player in both. And sadly, you know, I mean, we got a glimpse of it. You know, I mean, we saw enough of it to kind of know how special he was, you know, but all we got was a snapshot. I would have liked to have seen the full album.
The run of him running over Bosworth, that's an all-time highlight to me.
Yeah.
That run, and then and the home run he hit after he came back from the injury, and the home run in the All-Star game. Yeah, you give him an 8 to 10-year NFL career. I'm being fairly conservative, but if you give him a healthy 10-year NFL career and a healthy 12-year Major League career, he might have been in the Hall of Fame of both.
I think that's possible. I remember everybody remembers the Bosworth play because it happened on Monday Night Football, and it was Bosworth and all of that.
He knocked him 20 yards.
But I remember the run that I remember was an end run where he just took a pitch, and it was against the Cincinnati Bengals, and he went up the sidelines, and there are two defensive backs who have an angle on him. I mean, have an incredible angle. I mean, his defensive backs that are, by definition, fast guys, and they have an angle on him, and he just runs by both of them. I mean, just finds another gear and just goes up the sidelines, and they never even lay a hand on him.
Yeah.
And he goes like 70 yards for a touchdown.
Oh, yeah. Who would be your local guy? Don't steal it again.
I've got two, but I'll take one. It's going to seem odd because he's in the Hall of Fame. And so you'd say he had a great career.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
I'm going to say Lindros.
Yeah, okay, thanks. All right.
Was that yours too?
Two for two.
Oh.
Yeah, Lindros. Oh, yeah. Because, listen, I covered him when he came in. I wrote a story about him when he was in juniors. I went to watch him in Oshawa. And when he came in, all of the hope and everything, and there are a lot of reasons they didn't win during Lindros, much of which is they didn't really surround him with the cast that was needed, some of which was he wasn't quite the guy that you thought he was. But still, if you had given him a 12 to 15-year career playing 70, 80 games a year, mm-hmm. he could have been spectacular. So, yeah, we saw those two. We saw those two alike.
Okay, well, I should point out to the listening audience that you and I did not consult on this.
No, this morning I said, let's do this on your walk over. Think of a couple. But I both of ours are, I don't want to say obvious, but yeah. Okay. Moshe, you want to throw a name in there?
Yeah, well, my national guy is Ken Griffey Jr., who had an incredible career.
Yeah, but could have.
In my mind, if he had been healthy for his entire career, we'd be talking about him with Ted Williams, Mike Trout, and others as who's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, we may have been talking about him as the all-time home run leader. That's true. That's good.
And then a local guy, I thought this was who Ray was going to go with, is Randall.
Oh.
Imagine if Randall had never gotten hurt.
Yeah, well, that one year, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, good. We'll see what the people think. So, whatever you're calling us about, and I see a lot of people going to get to them all, if you want to throw in just one, we took two, but give us one, local or national, an athlete you wish, boy, if I had gotten to see that person an entire career never being injured, what could it have been? Let's go to Jimmy in New Jersey. What's up, Jim?
Hey, good morning, fellas.
Hey.
Before I say anything else, I want to thank you for the Willie Aree interview yesterday. That was right out of the park. There's so many people that don't even know who he was or what he did, but you guys stuck it again like another Olga Corbett dismount.
Well, thank you. Thank you. He was great. He really was great.
I'm picturing Ray in a leotard at this moment.
No, don't. Please don't.
But and you were spot. And by the way, I didn't call to talk about the Flyers, but you guys were both spot on about the current state of the Flyers affairs too. I think they would be well served if they took their minor league team and just dressed them in Flyers uniforms and played them. They'd make out better. But as far as I wanted to talk Phillies today, mm-hmm. I've heard it said that many times that the definition of crazy is when you keep repeating the same thing the same way over and over again and expecting different results. And when I look at my rearview mirror, it's been, what, 9 years of losing baseball with the Phillies. This game is very unforgiving, and if you don't respect it, it will cream you. And what I see is a team, well, actually, it's all of baseball. It's not just the Phillies that are guilty of this. But there's, you know, the modern thinking in baseball is such that they think that 150 years of good baseball can be just like wiped away, like, you know, an eraser on a blackboard, and they're going to reinvent the sport. And the fact is, you know, this team is not built for station-to-station baseball, which is what they're trying to play. If you look back at the last 9 years and all the losses that are piling up like cordwood, I think what you would see is an awful lot of innings where we got first and second, nobody out, bases loaded, nobody out. And then what happens invariably is the next guys that come up are all swinging from their ankles. There's no effort to move the runners over.
I hear you. I don't mean to cut you short, and I appreciate your point of view. That isn't how anybody plays the game anymore. And like you, I think that's very short-sighted. Nobody steals a base. I mean, the hit and run doesn't even exist in anybody's vocabulary anymore. It is the analytics about getting guys on and hitting home runs. The shame of it is, Ray, that the statisticians will tell you that the analytics work. I don't know if they work for the Phillies, but they work. It just, to me, makes the game much less interesting.
Oh, way less interesting. You know, and when you look, I don't care how you want to break down analytics, and I don't want to get off on just killing it, but if you're striking out 15 times a game, I'm sorry, not only is that boring, that's not good baseball. You know, it's just not. If you can't put the ball in play, I just don't think you can win. And this whole idea that the game has become about bases on balls, strikeouts, and home runs, it's choking the game down. It really is choking the game down from just an entertainment standpoint. You're losing the older audience, and you're not winning the younger audience. I just think that you use the term short-sighted. I don't think it's short-sighted to look at TV ratings that have declined now each of the last 4 years and suggest that there's a problem there. And, you know, the direction of the sport is, I mean, they're moving full speed ahead. I mean, it's more analytics. I mean, every team is adding more people to their analytics department.
But because I think there's a conflicting argument here. And I think the conflicting argument is this. The analytics, or the style of the game, all right? The style of the game as it's played right now makes for a very uninteresting game. It's slow. There's not a lot of action. There's, as you say, strikeouts are beautiful, but too many strikeouts is boring, and nothing happens. The other side of the argument is, if you want a team to work, it's proven that that approach works. So the game is conflicted within itself. Do you make rules that make the game more entertaining but stop some of that? Like the defensive shift, right? The defensive shift is very effective. It stole 100 hits from Ryan Howard, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm a manager and I want to win, I'm going to probably use that for my defense. But it makes the game less interesting. That's just one of those many examples. So baseball has to kind of come to terms with that, and they clearly haven't yet.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I really loved baseball growing up, watched a ton of it. I mean, if the Phillies were on TV, I was there from the first pitch to the last. And I wasn't alone. I mean, that's the way it was. Now, you know, I'll put a game on, I'll watch an inning, two innings, and frankly, I get bored. Mm-hmm. You know, and if they're losing me, and, you know, I'm not saying they've lost me, but losing me, then I know that goes across the board. And, you know, I just look at the strikeout count for this team in particular, and it's scary. You know, and
it's double digits every game.
Every game. And that's, you know, that can't be good for the team, and it can't be good for the spectator.
Not at all. Let's work in Joe from Mayfair. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Joe.
Hey, good morning. Always a pleasure. Ray, I got a question at the very end, and I'll give you my athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Flyers, it's the same thing every year. It's Mets. It's, to me, when the Flyers can't forecheck three against two, they've always been a team where they're always chasing the puck. It's like they're playing monkey in the middle. They can't get the puck. You know, a game against Boston about a week ago, and they pulled the goaltender, and they had four Flyers in the corner against three Bruins.
Oh, gosh, they could not get it out of the corner for, like,
Glenn,
3 minutes.
That was the most embarrassing 45 seconds of hockey I've ever watched in my life.
I know exactly what you're talking about, yes.
And that's the lack of want, the lack of care, the lack of physical and mental preparation. That's where I think the Flyers lack. They're too small up front. I'm not talking old, you know, Broad Street bullies,
but I know.
If you don't have the strength, 10, 15 pounds more to be able to forecheck and win when you grind and you muck in the corners and you try to keep the puck away, and your defensemen are too slow to take the puck from blue line to blue line, and you wave Gossesier, who's the only one willing to take chances to make plays, it sends such a bad message to the hockey club. And you can't just blame AV. I'm partly blaming him because I think he's been weak the second half of the year. But to me, it's mental and physical conditioning with this hockey club every single year. Unless they're playing downhill hockey, they can't play. And when your defensemen always come up to pinch or try to keep the puck in, you're going to give up a lot of odd man breaks and leave your goalie hang out to dry. But that's the talent that they have. And until they fix the problem, you're never going to succeed in the NHL. I mean, I look at one team right now who doesn't have the most talent. It's the Hurricanes, but they're most physical, probably the most conditioned team in the country in the NHL playing. And if you're not conditioned well, you can't compete, especially in this kind of a season. And they look like they can't play.
Joe,
like
I got to get to a break in about a minute. So what's your football point?
Right, a quick question for you. Can the Eagles move up from 12 to 7 if Pitts is still there, to trade up next year's 2 and a 3 this year to get up to it? And my player is Darren Dalton. I wish his knees would have been healthy from
Darren
jump.
Darren was
an amazing player, with 13 knee surgeries.
Yeah, it's a very good one. It's a very good one. Trade up from 12 to – well, first of all, Ray, any chance Kyle Pitts is going to hang on the draft board to 7?
No. I can't.
I don't think so.
I can't imagine that he makes it to 7, no. But there's been, and we can talk about this a little bit more on the other side of the break, there's a lot of chatter, that the Eagles are not done yet and that they are thinking about doing what the caller just suggested, which is trying to make a trade up to get back up into the top 10 to see which teams are willing to move out of there. There's some talk that Carolina might be willing to move out of there. Talk that maybe Denver might be willing to move out of there. And what would the price be, and what do you stand to gain? But I think I'd be surprised if Pitts made it past 5.
All right, we'll talk about that coming up, and we'll take your calls at 215-592-9494. He's Ray. I'm Glenn. Ray Danger, Glenn Macnow, 94 WIP. All right, so Ray, the caller Joe brought up right before the break some buzz that the Eagles may trade back up in the draft. They went from 6 to 12, and now there's a lot of stories that they're looking to get back into the top 10. I'm not exactly sure for whom. I don't think Kyle Pitts is a possibility. I don't think he's going to get past 5, but who knows if all those quarterbacks go. But whatever. So if this is a possibility, do you see somebody logically, let's say they're looking to get up to what, 7, 8, 9? You see somebody they'd be going for?
Yeah, I mean, 7, 8, 9, you could get some movement there. I mean, at 7, you got Detroit. I mean, they've got their quarterback now with the trade for Goff, so they're going to give him a chance. So they might be willing to trade out. The Panthers at 8, they might be willing to trade out. Broncos at 9, I mean, that's where you might see a team trade. And that's if the Eagles are going to move back, they'd have to pay a price to move back into that area. But how much, you know, who you would have to be, you're not just going to make that trade and then just go up there and then just say, okay, now what are we going to do? You know, if you're going to make that trade, it's with a specific player in mind. And, maybe they have decided in looking around, looked at Devontae Smith and looked at Jalen Waddle, and have decided it's not an either or. It's not like, they're both the same guy. So whichever one's there at 12, that's who we'll take. If one guy goes somewhere else, that's fine. We'll just take the other one. If they have decided in their evaluation that no, it's this guy. It's not both of them. It's not either of them. It's this guy. Then maybe they trade back for him. Or maybe they've decided that and there's been a lot of talk about this, and I can't really argue against it, is that their greater need is as a cornerback, to get somebody that can go over and play the other corner opposite Slay in a division where teams have loaded up with wide receivers. There's a lot of good receivers in this division now. You got to have somebody that can cover them. You look at what's there and on the board, and, you know, Horn is a good player. Sertan is probably the best player. Caleb Farley is, I thought, has great tape, but he's got coming off this back surgery. I wouldn't touch him in the first round. So maybe the Eagles have decided, okay, for this guy, I don't think he's going to be there at 12, because there's a really good chance that the teams right above us are going to take him. If we want him, we got to go back and get him, and maybe that's what they're thinking. They've targeted one of those. I think it's probably in that area. I don't think it's an lineman. I certainly don't think it's a linebacker, not a quarterback. They're not shopping for a quarterback. I mean, that was a while ago, but I never took that too seriously.
No.
But maybe if there's one receiver that they've said this is the guy, or one corner that they've said this is the guy, and they don't want to sit and wait till 12,
right?
They'll make the move to 7, 8, 9 and maybe pick him up.
All right. Let me ask you: is there somebody that you think, and those are the two positions, right? Wide receiver and cornerback. And I'm definitely leaning toward cornerback. I'm now a Patrick Surtain guy.
Okay.
Is there one position, one player that you say will be there at 8, 9, but won't be there at 12?
I've been talking about in my conversations about the draft. What I'm calling the Tuscaloosa Triangle, and I'm talking about the three Alabama players: Sertan, Smith, and Waddle.
Yeah.
And I think that what you're going to get, and this is just my projection, and I've gone through the draft a million times, and this is the way I think it's going to work out. I don't think Sertan makes it to 12. I think one of the two receivers will. I don't know which. But I think one of the two, not both, but one of the two receivers will.
Mm-hmm.
So out of that group, I would take whoever is left. If it's Smith, I'll take Smith.
Fine.
If
so
it's Waddle, I'll take Waddle. If Sertan somehow gets to 12, then I have to think about it. If the two receivers are gone, then I'm taking him. But it's got to be one of those three guys. But I think one of those three guys will be there at 12.
Okay, so you wouldn't do it.
I probably wouldn't do it for me. I mean, I know Howie likes to wheel and deal, and I know Howie, you know, this would be pretty bold on his part, you know, to trade it out and now trade back.
Yeah.
But I know that, and they've got additional picks to wheel and deal with. But I think you've got to have a specific player in mind, and I haven't heard from them that they have identified that guy. So if I'm them, I'm okay staying at 12 and taking the best, highest-rated player on the board in those two areas.
Cool. Let's get to Jim in the Northeast. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you? I want to comment on what you said about Moore and, you know, like Valles Cuz. And I want to make a comment about a center fielder. This is the way I feel. Okay, whoever picked Matt Moore must have thought he was going to be a great talent, which tells us that we do not have people that can make a good trade.
No, that's not necessarily true.
Talent.
No, nobody thought he was going to be great. What they hoped is that he would be passable as a fifth starter. Nobody had very high expectations. It's that they had so much money left in the budget. They needed to add a starting pitcher. There wasn't much out there. They figured, let's take a shot on this guy.
Charlie Morton was out there. But anyway, how come? And also, how come you keep holding on to Valsquez? Because, you know, sooner or later they can say, okay, he's not working.
Yeah, he's terrible.
Maybe we could release him, you know. And
no, listen, I didn't want to see Vinny Velasquez come back this year. And every time he takes the mound, I get nauseated. But I'm not going to defend them on that. I know why they did it. They did it just because they did it because they don't have a lot of guys coming up in the farm system to replace him. That's why they did it. Right? There's nobody else to do it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why he's there. All right. And by the way, I would have loved to have seen him sign Charlie Morton as well. Let's go to Carl in D.C. You're on with Ray and Glenn.
Gentlemen, good morning. Great show every weekend. It's not a weekend without Ray and Glenn.
Thank you, Carl.
So, Glenn, I completely, 100% agree with you on Gritty, and I love your line about the tentacle.
Thank you.
Of the corporate. I just see with these Flyers, I see no desire. I see them going through the motions. And I've been a Flyers fan since they started in 68, and I don't think I've ever seen a team look this listless. So.
And I think that's exactly what it is that drives me crazy. And, Ray, you mentioned it earlier. I mean, we've had bad teams with lack of talent, and we've kind of lived with that. But this is a passive, disinterested team, and that is never embarrassed by or never seems to react to being embarrassed by how poorly it loses. And it's a sham of a mockery of a fraud, Ray.
It is. And by the way, Glenn, on the Phillies lineup just released, Moniak is playing center field today.
Oh, good. Glad to see that. What's he batting? I got to look this up. Where's he batting?
Batting eight.
All right. Eight. I'm good with that. That's great.
Ray, a couple of things for you. One, I cannot wait for your book to come out. Is it being released on audiobook?
As of now, no.
I'm telling you.
As of now, I mentioned it because a couple people have brought it up and asked the question. The folks at Temple University Press said they have never done an audiobook before, but they said they would look into it, but I haven't heard. So my guess is probably not.
If it is, I would love to see you do the reading. Or hear it.
Oh, I would insist on it. You know,
incredible.
It's my life and my words, so I might as well read them.
While a lot of me thinks that's true, Ray, you may want to call on your old friend Liev for that one, too. Hold on 1 second. I'll get to you in a second.
Okay.
Ray, little Gene Hackman could do a chapter for you, right?
Yeah.
Who else? Ed Harris could do a chapter. You call on all those people.
All the guys I worked with. Alec Baldwin?
Yes. You do the first one. You do the last one. Farm out the others to all your famous friends.
Liev, right.
Yes. Right. Ray, you want me to call Temple Press? For God's sakes, this thing would sell 100,000 copies.
Really?
That's a good thought, Glenn.
Yep. Go ahead, Carl.
Draft question, Ray. I'm enough with the mock drafts and the Eagles trading up. We're going to get overwhelmed with that the next 2 weeks. But in the later rounds, I've been hearing talk on Inside the Birds from some others about a linebacker, Xavier Collins.
Yes.
If I have that name right, what's your opinion? Do you think he might be a good fit, or, you know, with the Eagles going a different direction?
Oh, well, you don't even have to think about him with the Eagles because he's probably going to be a first round player, and they're not going to draft a linebacker in the first round. Collins, in fact, Glenn and I, one of the things that we're going to do here is in a few minutes, one of the things I'm going to talk about are guys who are fast risers in the draft. And Xavier Collins is that. He's a linebacker from Tulsa. And he originally, I think people were talking about him as a second-round guy, as a second-day guy. But he's, on the strength of his postseason workouts and some of the tape that he's put out there, I think he's worked his way towards the bottom of the first round. I don't think he's going to make it out of Thursday night. So I don't think he's a good player, and I think he's the kind of guy that would bring a little punch to the defense, no question about that. But I don't see him being in play for the Eagles, no.
We do have a draft report coming up before the end of the show today, 215-592-9494. Ray Dinger, Glenn Macnow on 94 WIP. Along with Ray Dinger, I'm Glenn Macnow. I'm going to ask our callers to hang in a couple minutes because people are asking about your book. Your book is coming out soon, Finished Business. People can pre-order it on Amazon right now. Should be in stores. Ray, a lot of people have also asked me what's the plan with book signings. Tough days for that. Any thoughts on that?
I guess it's just going to be a matter of how, you know, stores are open now, but how comfortable are they going to be to have events where they're going to be inviting people to stand in line to get books signed? You know, that's something that's a down the road consideration. I really do think that by the time we get to fall, things are going to kind of get back more towards normal. And I would certainly hope that as we get later in the year towards, you know, Christmas time, that we'll be back to doing that kind of stuff. It's all under discussion, but there's no definite plans at the moment.
I have thoroughly enjoyed reading this book as you send me chapter by chapter. And one of the chapters kind of covers your early years on the football beat. And the amazing thing is, you're 1 year into your job at the Bulletin, the late, great Bulletin. You get hired to cover high school sports. You do it for a year. You're 23 years old. This is my favorite anecdote. The sports editor comes up to you and says, "Hey, Ray, can I buy you a soda?"
That's correct.
And proposes to offer, offers you the Eagles beat. And Ray, with all due respect, who's going to trust the biggest beat in the department to a guy who's 1 year or whatever out of Temple University?
Yeah, I know. I didn't expect it either. I really didn't expect it. I was 1 year out of Temple. I had been hired by the Bulletin, and they hired me to cover high school sports. And for 1969, that's what I did. I covered high school football and high school basketball in Philadelphia and was enjoying it and figured, you know, okay, I'll pay my dues here and hopefully, you know, years down the road, maybe I'll work my way up to covering one of the pro teams. But at the end of that year, Hugh Brown, the man who had covered the Eagles since the Bednarik Van Buren days, was retiring, and the Eagles beat was going to become available. And there was a lot of speculation, a lot of discussion within the department. Geez, who's Jackie? You know, Jackie Wilson was the sports editor. Who's Jackie going to pick to take Huey Brown's place? And, you know, is he going to go internally? Is he going to hire one of the, going to move one of the other guys up from one of the beats? Or is he going to go outside and hire a writer from another paper, you know, a pro football writer from another paper? I mean, it was I'm in the middle of that discussion saying, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a tough job. And then Jackie pulls me aside the one day, takes me down. The reason, but let me buy you a soda, was Jackie didn't have an office. He just had a desk in the middle of the sports department. So if he wanted to have a private discussion with you, there was no come in my office and close the door. If he wanted to have a private discussion with you, he would say, you know, let's go down to the cafeteria. We would go down to the Bulletin cafeteria and find a table off in the corner, and that's where it would be done.
Okay.
And that's what he did.
Yeah. All right. A lot of ground I want to cover here in the next 10 minutes because there's so much great stuff in this chapter. You end up covering your first Eagles training camp, summer 1970, Albright College outside of Reading. And among the people on that roster, that training camp roster, is the famous John Carlos, the Olympic gold medal sprinter people remember for the protest in Mexico City, one of the, you know, the great track athletes of all time. I think a lot of fans don't know that the Eagles actually drafted him. You said he was a 15th round draft pick,
right,
as a project. But the great part of this, and I know you've told me this story, but I'm sure it's new to most people, is you're young Ray Dinger in your first summer covering the team, hanging out in the locker room while the players are getting dressed, and he's having a problem doing it?
Yeah, we were allowed in the locker room before practice back in those days.
Yeah, can't that's do that. Changed.
Yeah, can't do that now, but we were. Yeah. And, you know, I was finished interviewing whoever I'm going to interview, and I'm getting ready to, I'm walking out to head out to the field to watch practice, and I look down this aisle, and standing there all by himself is John Carlos in front of his locker, and he has all of his equipment is spread out on the floor at his feet, and he's just staring at it. And practice is like ready to start. I mean, every other player is on the field, and he's standing there in a T-shirt, and his ankles are taped, and he's wearing his jock, and that's all he's got on, and all of his equipment's on the floor. And me and another writer, Billy Shefsky from the Daily News, you know, walked down there and said, you know, John, you got a problem? And he says, I don't know how to put this on. And
wow.
I mean, he had been a great world-class track guy. I mean, you know, bronze medalist at the Summer Olympics and all that kind of stuff. But he had never played real football. I mean, he had played touch football. He had played street football in Harlem where he grew up. But he had never put a football uniform on before. And so he had all of this stuff lying there, and he didn't know where to begin getting dressed. So Bill Shefsky and I, two sports writers, wind up dressing him for his first
unbelievable
Eagles practice.
And you had said the other players weren't all that interested in helping him succeed also.
No, they weren't. I mean, John was John, you know, they weren't all that interested in trying to help him out. There was, you know, again, this was only 2 years after Mexico City. This was only 2 years after the Black Power protest. He was still a very controversial figure. The Eagles in 1970 were a very white team. I think I remember doing a count like when I was doing the book. They only had seven black players on the roster. in 1970. So politically, he was not in step with most of the guys on the team. They looked at him as a guy who wasn't really a football player. They didn't know why he was there. He had taken his very unpopular stance at the Olympics. And so they all walked by. They saw the same thing we saw. This guy doesn't know how to put his uniform on, and they just kept walking.
And by the way, just to wrap that one up, he gets injured that year. They put him on the taxi squad or whatever, comes back next year and does not make the team because of a guy they drafted in the seventh round whose name was?
Harold Carmichael.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
They drafted Harold the next year, and it really came down to a choice. The last roster spot, it came down to a choice between Harold Carmichael and John Carlos, and they decided to keep Harold Carmichael.
They made the right pick for once.
I would say.
History-changing moment, because there are so many people who cover football, who follow football, but you really know the sport. And while you played it as a kid, you didn't play college football. Your career in football was, you know, was
pretty limited.
Okay. But you learned it, and you know it, and you learned it because somebody gave you that opportunity.
Yeah, Charlie Gower. He was the offensive backfield coach and a very nice man.
And later, I mean, did this after appearing in It's a Wonderful Life, which was very impressive.
Different Gower.
Different Mr. Gower?
Different Mr. Gower.
That's the only Mr. Gower I know.
I was at camp for about, you know, a week or 2 weeks and writing four or five stories a day and trying desperately to keep up and with my competitors at the other newspapers and writing all kinds of stuff that I hope I'm right when I write this. And Charlie, you know, and Charlie one day, as we're walking off the practice field, came over to me and he said, you seem like a nice boy. And he said, and I can see that you're trying really hard. He said, but I read the stuff that you put in the bulletin. And he said, and you just don't know very much about football. And he said, don't take it personally. He said, I don't think any of the writers really do. He said, but I can see you're really trying to do a good job. And, you know, listen, if every night in the dorms, back in the dorms, I'm watching film. And if you want to come by some night and just sit in with me, maybe I can show you a few things. I'll leave it up to you. It's your decision. But, you know, my door is open. And so, you know, I decided, why not? You know, I mean, I didn't have a whole lot else to do. You know, it's pretty slow up in Reading, Pennsylvania in the summertime. And I knew that he was right. I knew there was stuff in pro football. There was stuff in terms of strategy, X's and O's, that I just didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so my feeling was if I'm going to do this job right, I need to learn more. And so I used to stop by a couple times a week in the dorms, because we were allowed in the dorms back then. Again, that'll never happen again. But I would just go in and I'd, you know, Charlie's door was open and I would say, you know, you mind if I come in? No, come on in. And so he just sort of walked me through the whole thing. And over the course of that summer, I would go three, four times a week and sit with him at night, and he would just explain things to me, things that I thought I knew, things I thought I saw. He would say, no, 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 you're wrong. That's not the way that play went down. That's not the guy that's responsible. That was the safety's coverage. He blew it. You know, if you're going to write that the guy who chased him into the end zone, the cornerback, that he got beat on the play, no, he didn't. But you put that stuff in the paper. The fans read it. They think that's what happened. And next Sunday, they're booing that poor guy for something that wasn't his fault. You know, he said, you guys make mistakes, and we have to live with them. And he's right. I always remember that. And that's why, you know, in covering the team, went up for the newspaper, talking about it on the radio, talking about it on television, I always have that pause, because after the game's over, yeah, I think I knew what happened, but am I really sure? Because very often what you think you see and what really happened are two different things.
The fact that he took the time and interest to show that to you is really special. I mean, a coach wanting a 23-year-old reporter to succeed is not the norm.
No.
And I understand, you know, the logic of we want you to do it so that we don't look foolish, but all in still, this guy invested time in you.
Yes, he did.
I mean, you weren't one of his players. He invested time in you, and he really gave you kind of that early opportunity that helped make you who you are. Your opinion on football is so respected, and it is in part because you do your homework, and in a certain way, he taught you how to do your homework.
Yeah, I really owe him. I mean, he was a great guy. He was an assistant coach. He was an assistant coach on the 1960 team. He was the offensive coordinator for the team that won the championship. And in fact, he was the guy. He and I kind of bonded over this, I think, as much as anything. He, you know, I told him early on that how much I love Tommy McDonald. And Charlie's the guy who actually made Tommy McDonald a wide receiver. You know, they were trying to figure out what to do with him. Is he a running back? Is he a defensive back? And Charlie said, no, this kid's a receiver. Put him at receiver. So it was Charlie who came up with the idea of making Tommy McDonald a receiver.
Well,
and, of course,
go.
He goes on his way to the
Hall of Fame.
That's
two Hall of Fame careers he impacted.
How about that?
All right. One other thing that I found fascinating, and you talked about the access that you used to have back in those days, and I don't know that fans know or particularly need to care how much access reporters have, but you cannot hang around the locker room before practice these days, and you certainly don't go into the dorms at training camp. And one of the other things is when you started, you were flying on the plane with the team headed home from games,
right?
As you put it, usually losses, and it led to some confrontation.
Yeah, it did. Because the writer who went before me, Huey Brown, he used to fly the team charter. He flew the team charter to the game. He flew the team charter home from the game. Very convenient.
Yeah, convenient, but not a good look.
Not a good idea. And, you know, the sports editor said, no, that's what Huey did all those years. You might as well do it. It's just fine. You know, don't make your own flight reservations. Just fly the team charter. And what I found, I was never that comfortable with it because I'm not part of the team, you know. And it was really, it got very uncomfortable on the flights home from these games because as soon as I got on the plane, as soon as the plane got up in the air, I would pull out my portable typewriter and, you know, put the paper in the carriage, and I would start writing my story about the game. And, of course, on the plane, the players after the game, the guys are, you know, they're sleeping or trying to sleep. And there I am right in the middle of the plane, you know, with the typewriter, clack, click, 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 clack, 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 clack. And, you know, and I'm also writing stories 9 times out of 10 right. about a game they lost. Right. So I'm writing about all the mistakes that they made.
Oh, God. I can just picture there's a guy there. He's exhausted, right? He got beat up and he lost and he's worried about his career and he's on a flight and he's trying to sleep. And he's hearing your click clack thinking, right.
There you go.
Ray didn't type that fast.
No, I didn't type nearly that fast. But thanks, Moshe. That kind of gets the idea.
And as he's hearing this, as he's trying to sleep, he's thinking, that guy's ripping me right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's writing stuff right now that's going to make me lose my job.
Well, the one incident that I'll always remember was Timmy Rosovich, who was the linebacker who used to bite the tops off of beer bottles and eat light bulbs and all
set
those kinds of things.
Fire,
set himself on fire. Timmy was a true crazy man. He was a true wild man. But read everything that was in the newspaper and always told you what he thought. And we were flying home from Dallas after another loss down in Dallas. And I've got my typewriter out on the little tray in front of me, and I'm typing away. And Rosovich is leaning on the back of my seat, reading as I write. And you know, and I'd write a line, and he'd say, No, that's not what happened. And then I'd write another line, and he'd say, no, that's wrong. What are you writing it? And then finally, it was, you know, and then it was like, you know, are you really going to put that you-know-what in the newspaper tomorrow? And finally, I turned around, and I said, do you mind, you know, I'm trying to work here. And Rosovich said, oh, I see. You can sit upstairs, and you can watch us work, and you can criticize us, but you don't like it when somebody does it to you. And it bugged me because I said, I'm thinking to myself, you know, he's right.
Yeah.
You know, it bugged me because he was so right about that. And it was after that I said, you know what? This is stupid. I really shouldn't be on this plane. I shouldn't be doing this. And from that point on, I never flew another team charter.
Well, there's so much great stuff in this book, and we'll continue to go over a little bit of it every week. And I certainly advise people to go look for it. Finished Business by Ray Didinger, available on Amazon, soon to be in bookstores. And Ray, somebody just sent me a note saying when they do the video version, video would be better, the audio version, does Christie Brinkley get to do a chapter? Telling you. Not a bad idea.
Not a bad idea?
No. Let's get Fred up here. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Glenn. Ray, how are you? Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Hi, Fred.
I have a couple points about the Flyers. Can you imagine if Ed Schneider was still alive? He must be rolling over in his grave.
Yeah, he'd be going nuts. He would not abide a team that quits in games like this.
You know what else I hate? I know what you need it, but the cap. Well, if you have bad contracts, you're done. I mean, they're stuck with Voracek, Giroux, even JVR. That's a third of their cap. There's nothing you can't make trades. Years ago, Clark and Homer would
something. That's their own misdoings. I don't think the Giroux contract was particularly bad. I mean, we can debate what he's done, but
for two more years.
Yeah, I know the Voracek one. I didn't like when they did it, and I never liked it. JVR Ray to me has the sense of being a future Seattle Kraken.
I think so too. Yeah, that's kind of where I see that one headed. I agree.
And these, one more point. These babies are going to get this coach fired because you can't criticize them. You know, if God forbid they're overpaid bums, you criticize them and they're all, they get all bent out of shape. And they're going to get this guy. He's a good coach.
And thanks for your call. I appreciate your level of passion and anger about the Flyers because that's the way I think people should feel. But, Ray, one of the things that came out at the trade deadline from the general manager is they're not thinking about firing the coach.
No. I mean, unless there's a complete 180. I mean, I thought the only noteworthy thing that came out of it from Chuck Fletcher was when somebody asked the question about the coaches, you're thinking about changing the coaches, he said flat out, no.
Yep.
So, I mean, he clearly put it on the players, and I agree with him. I think it is on the players. But it's also the composition of the team, which is his department. I just think he's put a bad team together.
No question about it. Let's sneak in Antonio in Douglasville before the break. What's up?
Hey, guys. I heard what you said about Roman Quinn earlier, and I was also disappointed that Girardi played him yesterday. And that got me thinking about what you said last week when Girardi forgot the number of mound visits in Atlanta.
Yeah.
That if Kapler made that mistake, you would have roasted him for a week. So
yep.
It's pretty clear that you're holding Girardi to a lower standard just because you like his personality.
Except that I criticized him for starting Quinn yesterday.
Right. But, I mean, it's only been a week, and him forgetting the number of mound visits is just a footnote. I mean, we would be talking about this 24 hours a day.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're probably right, and I probably do hold him to a different standard. Listen, your point's a fair point. Part of it is that Joe Girardi came here as a winner and a proven manager,
exactly.
And part of it is that Gabe Kapler didn't, and Gabe Kapler's weirdness kind of compounded it. But
right, so it was personal. So you owe Gabe Kapler an apology for
Gabe Kapler was a terrible manager. Why do I owe him an apology?
I mean, he has a better Phillies record than Joe Girardi has.
He was a terrible manager. I don't care whatever number you want to put. Do you think he was a good manager?
I think he did just fine in San Francisco. He finished.
I didn't ask you that
much
question.
More talented.
I have no discussion of what he did in San Francisco. This is irrelevant.
Well, he's a manager.
I know. We're not discussing the Giants. Do you think – listen, I think Terry Francona was a terrible manager with the Phillies, and he went on
to become an excellent manager
elsewhere. Do you think that Gabe Kapler was a good manager with the Phillies?
Yeah. I mean, he handled the same bullpen where Joe Girardi finished the worst in 90 years.
Okay.
I mean –
so you think that he was a good manager with – I mean, it's simple yes or no. You think he was a good manager here?
Yeah, no question about it.
Okay. I thoroughly disagree.
We could not disagree more.
Okay. Well, I mean
– all right.
Yeah.
I appreciate your call. Now, I will – go ahead.
You owe Gabe Kapler an apology.
I don't.
You just called him weird, and you said that clouds your judgment about
and he was a bad manager.
Okay. What has Joe Girardi done better than Kapler?
I didn't tell you that Joe's doing a good job. This is not Joe versus Gabe. This is that Gabe was a bad manager, and Joe, who came here with a very good record, is...
Joe Girardi has a below the average Yankees managerial performance.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Listen, I appreciate it. You're good?
I mean, we're still waiting for an apology, Glenn.
Well, you keep waiting. You can call me next week if you like, but you're certainly not getting it today. This is not happening.
Yeah.
Listen, he certainly – I invite Antonio to call back, and we can discuss Joe Girardi every week, and we can put it in light of Gabe Kapler, but I don't think Gabe was a good manager here.
No, I don't think he was either. And the reason that if people are giving – Joe Girardi the benefit of the doubt is I think that he demonstrated over time when he was managing in New York that he is a good manager, and he knows what he's doing.
Joe Girardi could lose 110 games this year. That doesn't make Gabe Kapler a good manager.
No.
Okay. Coming back, we'll talk to our friend Big Daddy Graham, and we will take your calls as well. 215-592-9494, Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP. Well, it's always a delight and pleasure when we get joined by our pal, Big Daddy Graham. Always brings something interesting to the table. First of all, Big, how's the podcast going? You asked me to do one. I was delighted that you let me name one of the 100 greatest albums of all time.
Yes, and it's been running, and the podcast is going great. It gives me something positive to do. I have a lot of fun doing it. It gets other people involved. All you got to do is go to BigDaddyGraham.com, and boom, it's right there as soon as you go on.
Yeah, I did. I did Layla as one of my all-time favorite albums. Ray, you should do one of these for him. It's what I think mine was like 4 minutes. You just talk. You pick a favorite album, Ray.
I'm sort of amazed that you didn't go Beatles, knowing your love of the Beatles.
I figure he's got so much of that.
Oh, okay.
You should do a Motown. Too.
And Ray, I'll tell you what. You should do the Beastie Boys. Right. So start listening to the Beastie Boys as much as you can, and we'll come at you in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
All right. So we always enjoy your list. What do you got today?
Well, inspired by all this Howie Roseman shenanigans this week, and I think you put this in my head to begin with, 5 best general managers. And this was not easy because the reason why we're doing it is because everybody's so unhappy with Howie Roseman. But how do you leave a guy who won a Super Bowl off the list? So he is off the list, but I want to make sure that people understand why. One, he's the reason why we're doing it, and those guys usually don't make the list. But two, it's hilarious. He's not too well liked in this town at the moment.
Yep.
Only guy we won a Super Bowl with. So coming in at number 5 is another guy. I once was asked to moderate one of Ray's Tommy and Me shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the show was over, I was like, moderate. And then we got a question in the back. Oh, here we go. And anyway, Jim Murray was there. Right, former general manager Jim Murray. And he stood up. Hey, everybody, it's Jim Murray, blah, blah, blah. And he started talking. 25 minutes later, he was done.
I remember that night.
And I love the guy. And I figured out why he was a good general manager. People would give him the players that he wanted just to set him up. I love Jim Murray. So, and he was a good general manager on top of it. Coming in at number 5. Oh, another guy that didn't make it, only because I don't know anything about hockey. But, man, Bobby Clark was a riot. He never could hide his disgust over something.
Oh, yeah.
And he was brutally honest about it. I remember when the Flyers got Eric Lindros. I was playing ball with a guy who knew hockey really well. And he said, well, get ready for Bonnie and Carl. I said, who's Bonnie and Carl? And he went, you'll find out.
Mm.
And way to Bobby has to handle him. Anyway, so coming at number 4. Oh, Pat Gillick. Oh, my God. Not mm-hmm. only a great general manager, but he wore great hats. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, different standard to judge, but sure.
Now, come on. He's a great general manager.
Yeah.
Coming in at number 3. Oh, Pat Williams. I love Pat Williams. And I like when he had to convince, I think, the Flyers' Sixer owner was Fitz Dixon at mm-hmm. the time.
Right.
And he had to convince him to spend all this money on the dock. And he couldn't figure out how to do it. And finally he went, he's the Babe Ruth of basketball. which he was. He didn't turn out to be that great, but it was awesome. And I'm so glad, if for no other reason, Pat Williams makes this list. Plus, Pat Williams had a book out of jokes. It was a whole book of jokes. And it was good for somebody like me who does a lot of emceeing at certain events. So I bought the book off him, and I called him. He goes, meet me at the Sixers office, which I did. He sold the book to me out of the trunk of his car.
He didn't even give you a book, huh?
Sold it out of the trunk. No, I wasn't in the media.
I got to be honest, I've done the same.
Oh, I got to be honest. Well, I forget who it was. Andrew Vitoli said I was going to have the first million-selling book, selling them hand to hand.
Yep.
How do you leave Paul Owens off this list, the Pope? I mean, you can't. I mean, those teams that he put together, Smith, Luzinski, and Bob Boone, I mean, it goes on and on and on. He was really, he should be number one, but coming in at number one, Keith Allen. I mean, Keith Allen put together a hockey team that not only won two Stanley Cups, but put together a hockey team that this town fell in love with and are still in love with all of these years later. So hats off to Keith Allen for inventing the Broad Street Bullies, winning two cups. He's my number one. Now, I defy you to come up with a better list than that.
I think it's pretty good. You remember, do you know Keith Allen's nickname?
No, I do not.
Ray?
Keith the Thief.
Yep.
Because of whenever he made a trade, it isn't 100% true, but it's largely true that whenever he made a trade, he always got the better of it.
Big, yeah, I think it's a good list. You know, Ray, anybody he left off that you think's got to be there?
No, I all the ones that I was thinking of were there. I was wondering at the end of the last two. I think I figured it had to be Paul Owens and Keith Allen. I wasn't sure in what order, but I think Big Daddy got it. I think he nailed it. I think he got it right.
You're a check. We'll be glad we find it.
Hey, Big, by the way, one last thing. I heard that Ava and Bill are going on their honeymoon finally this week. That's great. You got to be happy. Your daughter is great, and her husband's a nice guy.
I'm happy because she'll be out of the house for a week.
Good.
I was waiting to see if you got Don DeJardin in that list, but you didn't put him in there.
Just missed,
I'm sure.
That was the 9-73 Sixers?
That was the man that built the 9-73 76ers.
Nicely done.
By the way, I got to throw in one last thing. I hope basketball fans are realizing they're like practically seeing history with Joel Embiid. I watched him make a move the other night. He split two defenders like he was AI. He's 7 feet tall, and he's splitting defenders. That guy, he's playing at a level. Let's just keep our fingers crossed he stays healthy, all right?
Absolutely. Big, always a pleasure, man. Nice to talk to you.
You got it, guys.
All right, be well, friend. There you go.
Yeah.
It was a good list.
It was a good list. And I would have gone the same way. Keith Allen, to me, is number one. He did a tremendous job building that team. And his record in trades was just amazing. Mm-hmm. I remember when he traded for Ricky McLeish, everybody said, who is this guy? You know, he traded a guy named Mike Walton, who was actually a pretty proven
shaky
Mike Walton, who was a pretty proven scorer in the NHL. He traded him for this minor leaguer named Rick McLeish, and none of us had ever seen or heard of. It's like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then Rick McLeish comes in and scores 50 goals. Oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah, it worked.
He was really, really good.
Let's talk to Sean in Wilmington. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Sean.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
All right.
Good.
I respect and love your opinions, and part of my pun, but I'm sitting out back. It's a beautiful day, enjoying some rays.
There
good morning,
you
Ray.
How you doing, Sean?
Oh, I'm doing great. Hey, I got one question before I give you my sports. When this is all over, you guys going to be back at Delaware Park?
We don't know. Right now, all of the remotes are kind of on hold for obvious reasons. So I just can't give you any information on that.
And if you were, would I be able to, like, walk up and talk to you?
If we were, we would be delighted to have you walk up and talk to us.
Oh, okay, great, because I met Jim Salisbury in a Wawa on 202, and he see me looking at him. He see me just staring at him. And he walked over, put out his hand, yeah, I'm Jim Salisbury.
Oh, there you go.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it was a beautiful, you know. And I know you guys were just as, you know, just as
good
people.
We're delighted to meet with people.
We sure are.
All right. So anyway, I'm going to give you my player, but before that, have you guys ever seen the 30-30 on Bo Jackson?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this guy wasn't just a football, baseball player. He was a track star. He could bowl 300. He could put a archery in a bullseye. I mean, this guy was more than just baseball and football.
Remember when they did the Bo Knows commercial, right?
Right. Yeah.
Which had him dressed up doing everything. And
right.
What you learned at the time was, okay, yeah, he never played hockey. He never did some of those, but actually, as you said, he was an amazing athlete in many areas.
He actually could have done it. It was his choice where he wanted to go. But
yeah, no question.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to give you my athlete, and believe it or not, he's still playing. But I would have liked to see him pre-injury and pre-child being what he is now, Joel Embiid. I think the child, yes.
Joel Embiid is a great one. Of course.
Yeah. Because he missed a couple years for injury and off and on. And but ever since he's had this child, he's been like, you know, because what did he play, 1 year of college or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. I do hope we get to meet you sometime. This is his sixth year, Ray? I may be off by a year, but in my mind, it's his sixth year.
I don't know that it is. Yeah, you might be off by a year. But, yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, he had an injury that basically short-circuited his college career, and who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. If he had the opportunity, you know, the health, that's actually it's a really good one. I don't know why we didn't think of it. Okay, so this is 1, 2, 3. This is his seventh year. He was drafted in 2014, did not play. 2015, did not play.
Right.
Next year, 31 games, 63, 64, 51. This year, 38 out of, I think they played 57 or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he has, over the course of his career, missed many more games than he's played in. This is his seventh year. I know they haven't played 82 games every year this year and last, but, I mean, it's the opportunity to play about 500 games. He's played just under half of those. If Joel Embiid had been healthy the whole time and gotten to play all those years, I think Joel Embiid would be, oh God, I hate to say the word, a generational player, because we've heard that before, but I think he'd be one of the greats.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
Yeah, it is a good name, because I wasn't thinking of him because he's still playing.
Right, he's still, you know, he's only 26.
He's still playing, and you and I yesterday were talking about him, where he stands in the conversation for NBA MVP.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't necessarily think of him in the context of, gee, what could have been, because you're still dealing with the what is, which is pretty good. Yeah. But, I mean, there's absolutely a valid idea.
Yeah, really good one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now. Ray's going till noon. Then we are going to kick off Phillies pregame. Phillies against the Cardinals today. We'll come back and actually give you a little draft talk after this. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now, 94 WIP. We'll sneak in a couple of calls before we get out of here. But, Ray, we always like to have at least a segment looking at the upcoming NFL draft. Last week you gave us three offensive sleepers in the draft. I don't have their names handy. I hope you do.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll go over your defensive sleepers. The offensive sleeper, remember, was a running back, a wide receiver, a tight end.
That you are correct. And they are Jamar Jefferson is the running back from Oregon State. The wide receiver player I really like named Cade Johnson from South Dakota State. And the tight end was Tony Poljan, 6'7", converted quarterback who's still kind of learning how to play. But he showed some promise at the University of Virginia, and I believe that he will probably be a day three pick, but 6'7", 260-pound target in the red zone works for me. So those are my three offensive sleepers.
All right, so let's talk defense.
Okay, three defensive sleepers, and Glenn, as you know, my history in these, I can't go through a year of sleepers without having at least one guy from Kansas State.
Yeah.
Kansas State has always been good for me.
Yeah.
Jordy Nelson and Darren Sproles, among others, have come through for me. So I'm going to go Kansas State yet again, and I'm going to take a defensive lineman named Wyatt Hubert. 6'3", 260 pounds, ran a 4.7, 5.40, which is really good for a guy his size, 25 and a half career sacks. The thing I like about him is he's versatile. He can play both as a stand-up player and with his hand on the ground. But he plays really hard. I mean, he's a guy, the coaches and the scouts will always talk about. He plays with a high motor. He really does. He plays hard all the time. People will say he's a little bit undersized at 260 pounds, but the league is kind of tending towards smaller defensive linemen that are pass rush specialists, guys that can play on the edge. I think he's that kind of player. I think if he finds himself in the right situation, maybe even Philadelphia, a team that needs to bulk up its pass rush, I could see him being – he will be a day three guy. He's not going to go round one, two, or three. He'll be a day three guy, but I have a feeling he's one of those day three guys that's going to come in and make a roster and contribute.
Like it.
Okay. My next guy is a defensive back. He sat out this past season due to COVID, which I think probably dropped him down in the draft a little bit, but his name's Kerry Vincent Jr., LSU. Probably saw him play 2 years ago for the LSU team that won the national championship. As I said, he sat out this past year. He was the nickel defender. He was the nickel corner on that LSU team, played in the slot. He's a converted track guy. Oh, well, not actually converted. He continued to run in track. Was an outstanding track. I actually went to LSU more to run track than play football. But he became a really good football player. Broke into the starting lineup for a national championship team. And in only two seasons, he had 6 interceptions, and he's also a kick returner. So he's a guy that I think offers you a lot. He can come in, he can play inside, he can play the slot, he can play outside because he's got the speed to play outside, and he can help you on special teams. So he's a guy that, if you're not bothered by the fact that he sat out this season, and I don't think that this should bother him very much, he's a guy that I think can come in, and he'll, again, be a day three pick, but a guy with that 4.37 speed, I like it. So he's my other one, and now my last one is a linebacker from South Carolina named Ernest Jones. I really like this guy. He's the scouts won't like him because they'll say that, he doesn't run that fast. He's a 4.6 40. They'll say he's not necessarily big enough. He's 225. But he's one of these linebackers who's always around the football. He's a great tackler. I mean, he's a terrific form tackler. You never see him miss a tackle. When he gets to a ball carrier, he takes him to the ground. I saw a game that he played against LSU where he had 19 tackles. He was credited for 19 tackles. It seemed to me like he had 20. I mean, it seemed like he had 29. I mean, he was always around the ball against an explosive LSU team. And as another example of a guy that I've talked about, even when the team's behind in the fourth quarter, he's flying around and playing hard. That's the kind of player he is. He certainly will be an upgrade for some teams, special teams. I mean, he comes in his rookie year. I guarantee you he's going to be a big-time special teams player. But he's smart enough, and he's active enough, and he's physical enough that I believe that he will work his way into some sub-packages, play some goal line, play some short yardage. He'll play some defense for you. But initially, he's going to definitely upgrade your special team. So Ernest Jones, linebacker from South Carolina, rounds out my three defensive sleepers.
Now, are all three of these guys day three picks?
I believe so. I don't think the Jones will go. I don't think the only one that might go day two maybe is Kerry Vincent because everybody loads up drafting defensive backs because everybody is looking for defensive backs because they're playing nickel and dime coverage so much. So Vincent may make it into the second day, but I think both Jones and Hubert will be there on the third day, and they're both really good players and. I really like Wyatt Hubert. I really like the intensity that he plays with. And I could see him being a guy that's – everybody loves to rotate on the defensive line now. You always play with five or six guys on a defensive line.
Yep.
And he's a guy that definitely could come in and be a rotation player for somebody.
Nice. Good stuff, Ray. You really have me looking forward to the draft. Now I got a reason to watch rounds 4 and 5. So there you go.
There you go.
Let's get John in Philly. You're on with Ray and Glenn. Hello, John.
Hi, guys. Doing? Pleasure to be on with you.
Nice to call, John.
Yeah, I just think Roseman's looking like a complete moron because of, how can I say it? you draft back to draft up?
Well, we don't know that they're moving up.
No, but I'm saying, like, if he does it, you know what I mean? It just makes no sense. Why would you draft back to even consider? He should.
Well, I'll give you the counter argument. I'll give you the counter argument.
Sure.
It's value. I think Miami gave you a lot for that switch. I think Miami overpaid the Eagles on that. I don't know if I wanted Roseman to move down from 6 to 12, but if he did, I think he got good value. If he can move from 12 to 9 and not pay a lot and get a guy, then it's not a bad idea.
Right. I do have a guy for you when you're done.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Pelly Lindbergh.
Oh, well. Yeah. I mean, injured, the question we asked is there one guy you would love to see play his entire career without being injured? Who would it have been? Lindbergh, of course, was killed in a car crash. So, yeah, how old was he, Ray? 27, 28?
Oh, no, I don't even think he was that old.
Is that right?
I think he was mid-20s, yeah.
Yeah,
he was, I mean, he was just a baby.
Yep. Mark in Medford, you're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Mark.
Hey, great show, guys.
Thank you.
If the Eagles get Ernest Jones, the headline could be Ernest Goes to Camp.
I'll keep that in mind.
The guy that I would have loved to see play healthy was Andrew Toney.
Oh, sure. Sure.
And he was hampered by foot injuries his whole career.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's much doubt. In fact, when we had Billy Cunningham on for Tell Us Your Story, Billy talked a lot about that he said that if Andrew had not had the foot injuries, that he felt that Andrew was on his way to being a Hall of Famer. And I think that's probably true. I think he was.
Gosh, all the talent they had on that team. It is amazing how many great players were on that team.
Yeah, sure were.
Try to squeeze in a couple more before Ray gets out of here. Jay in Florida, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, guys. I just want to talk a little bit about Vince Velasquez and Roman Quinn. With Velasquez, you take a look at his ERA on one inning. In other words, go back his entire career, starter, reliever, first inning, he's usually lights out, and sometimes 1-2-3. I don't know why they're not just using him as a one-inning reliever, seventh and eighth inning, and nothing else. He runs into trouble when they stretch him out in the second. Regarding Roman Quinn and Mickey Moniak, I think they're also doing a disservice to themselves to try to get one of these guys going by batting him eighth, because the next batter up is the pitcher. He's never going to see any good pitches. They're better off, honestly, batting him ninth or seventh, so there's somebody behind them in the lineup. And my guy, what it could have been if he hadn't been injured, is actually Dick Allen. He had an overslid second base in Chicago in 1966 and threw out his shoulder. He hadn't put his hand through the car or got into a bar fight or whatever.
Or whatever that was.
I imagine what he would have done in a Phillies uniform.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay. You know, Ray, it's Dick Allen is we talked about Dick Allen a lot in the last year because there was the push to get him in the Hall of Fame, and then unfortunately he passed away. But his one, I was not living in Philadelphia as a kid, so I didn't, you know, he wasn't a guy I watched growing up. You did.
I did.
I always get an impression from so many people that that's one where everybody would love a do-over.
Oh, I definitely think so. Yeah.
Many reasons.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of got one in 1976 when they brought him back at the end of his career. He came back, they re-signed him, and he was part of the team that went to the playoffs in 1976 when that young Phillies nucleus that ultimately went on and won it in 1980, they were just starting to put it together, and they brought Dick Allen back as the veteran guy on that team. And he was with them for a couple years, but he wasn't anywhere near
Dick Allen
people remembered.
Right, that young, amazingly talented guy that was probably ahead of his time with both the organization and a percentage of the fan base.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah. Carl in Bucks County, we'll sneak in real quick. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yeah, Carl.
Okay, very quickly, I've got the perfect pair. Compare and contrast at their peak Chamberlain head up in the same game against Embiid.
You're talking about playing era, but playing now.
Wilt at his peak, Embiid at his peak, best day, best game, covering each other. Because I'm a big Wilt fan, and I don't know who would be better, but this kid is terrific. But
yeah.
I would just love to see that.
I would love to see that, too. I'd rather actually, can I see him on the same team somehow? I don't know how they'd fit in the lineup, but that would be something to see. Ray, I know you are going. I hope you enjoy the rest of your weekend. Any big plans tonight?
No, I think I'm going to tune into that HBO show you recommended.
Yes, yes. So tonight, Mayor of Easttown, starring Kate Winslet on HBO. The series starts and it's getting really good advanced reviews. And she plays a cop, a detective in Delco. It's actually Chester County, but they gave her the Delco accent and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's set locally. They filmed it, I think, mostly in Phoenixville, Drexel Hill, all around the area. And if you and I watch it, we can review it together next week. That'd be fun.
Okay, let's do it. The idea of Kate Winslet as a cop in Delaware County is pretty amusing, I have to say.
There you have it. Anyway, I'm going to come back with pregame right after this. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.